Our next guest is Dr. Dean Hart. Oh, you don't have him yet. Okay. His website is deanhartscientist.com. He is a doctor, a microbiologist, and he is an expert in microbiology and a published author on the transmission of viruses and diseases. And he talks about coronavirus, COVID-19, and its impact on major metropolitan centers like New York City and other major urban centers. And for the last 25 years, Dr. Hart has taught as an associate research scientist and assistant professor at the Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons. And his website is, and I'll post this in the chat room, is deanhartscientist.com. Do we have him yet? Okay, super. Dr. Hart, welcome to the program.
Oh, good to be with you.
Well, thank you for joining us. I just told my listeners, our listeners, all about your background and about what you do, what you've done. And of course, everybody's interested in COVID-19, the coronavirus, the wearing of masks, and it's not a really healthy thing to do, right?
Well, there's so many questions so many people have, and so few people have, nobody has answers. Let's say, forget about so few. We're all guessing one step at a time, no matter how sophisticated a scientist you have. They change their minds when the data comes in. We have a paucity of data.
Right. And it's hard to know who to believe or what to do. And what is your opinion? What is your I see people wearing masks. And yet when I have put on a mask, I think, gosh, this really, you can't breathe too well wearing a mask. And I think that that's not a good thing to be doing.
Well, if you are sick, and you might not even know you're sick, but if you're positive for the coronavirus and asymptomatic or symptomatic, a mask has unquestionable scientific benefit. The big question that's still out there, not for the ones that are suffering from the disease, whether they know it or not, the question is, if I have had it and now I'm maybe immune, or if I'm negative, does a mask help me? Does it help me if I'm negative? That is where the thought is at. It's pretty apparent. We have enough data from enough virology studies to know that if you're positive, well, if you're symptomatic, you're probably not roaming around with a mask. You're lying in bed sick as a dog. But if you're positive and asymptomatic, or so slightly symptomatic you think you have allergies, that's where the mask unquestionably will have value.
Okay. But in certain areas of the country, particularly here in where I live, I see people driving by themselves in their cars wearing a mask, and I'm thinking, that's a little weird. Who are they protected? What's wrong with this person? And in fact, there's been people have gotten into automobile accidents because they can't breathe, they lose consciousness, and crash their car. And I see people running. I live by a park, a lake, and they're running around the lake with a mask on. I'm thinking, they really shouldn't be doing this. If they're well enough to run, they shouldn't be wearing a mask. As you say, if you're sick, you need to be taking care of yourself. But
Okay.
if you're well enough to run, you shouldn't be wearing a mask. Would you agree?
Well, you have two scenarios you brought up. In a car, I couldn't agree more that if you're in a car, even if you're with your son, daughter, wife, they're exposed to you in the house. You don't need a mask in the car. It eludes me, the logic of wearing a mask in the car. And I have read about those occasional people who have had car accidents because they wore a mask in the car. So I'm with you. A mask in the car certainly has little value. I kind of chuckle inside. I do not wear a mask in the car. Even if I was COVID positive, I don't even know if I'd wear one. I'd have to think about that, but I probably wouldn't be outside. But a mask in the car, I'm with you. Now, when you're jogging or running and you have 6 feet distancing, and obviously you're either disease-free or carrying the virus asymptomatically. If you're 6 feet away and jogging, it's reasonable not to wear a mask. So jogging, assuming we have distancing, I see no value in wearing a mask. First, you're not symptomatic and COVID. Obviously, you're not sick. But can you be affected where your coronavirus, as a whole lot of people, it could be 30, 40% of the people that get the virus don't even know it. More in the children's range of ages, they get it, the carriers, and they don't know they have it. But when you're jogging and you got a comfortable distance, I'm with you again, no mask. If you're jogging in a group and you're not doing social distancing of 6 feet, it theoretically, but unlikely, you could be coronavirus positive and transmit it. But that, like you said, it's improbable.
Right. And if you are, for instance, when you go to the post office, you're 6 feet away from the, they have it marked on the floor. They have X's on the floor. If you're 6 feet away, what is the point of having to wear a mask?
Well, 6 feet is not a magic scientific number. It's just like somebody picked that number, seemed reasonable. And see, viruses do not sprout wings and fly in the air, but they can be propelled by coughing and sneezing, speaking loud. These will propel virus. So when we're at the supermarket and we're 6 feet away from in a circle, in a distance, that is not the typical situation at the supermarket. Because when you're at the market, you're touching produce and now you really have big problems. You got to clean your produce off well when you get home. But wearing a mask serves a purpose in the supermarket because typically I've gone to the market. Typically, there'll be times when you're not 6 feet. Typically, you're always less than 6 feet when you're picking up the items from the shelf, and you could let a little sneeze, cough. Maybe you got allergies, maybe you got COVID. But the psyche of society has to be thought of reasonably well, and it is a mask. For me personally, mask is a pain in the butt, but I understand why my glasses have to fog up, and I always got to fiddle with my glasses. I understand it, live with it, and I couldn't agree more. It's the most annoying thing since the last most annoying thing. But the thing is that the mask in the supermarket, if you pick that 6 foot distance on the line for that moment in time, you got your argument. But walking around the supermarket, most of the time you're not 6 feet away or more. And you can be sick enough to go to the supermarket, get food, and then go home and go to sleep for the next day.
Well, okay. Now, does this okay? The flu kills more people each year than COVID-19. So why this super policies? These policies that everybody should wear a mask and that we need to be 6 feet away and that and what about the germs? Do they stay alive on a counter or something like that? If you sneeze on a counter, the next person in line at the supermarket or at the post office? Are they going to touch that counter and get the disease? And it seems to me that sequestering people to their homes for the relatively small number of people who have tested positive or who have died, but and the rest of us need to be sequestered. Where was all of this caution when the flu was during flu season? This is an attack. Go ahead.
When you compare the COVID to the flu, we compare the COVID to many viruses that have passed. I've compared it to polio. I've compared it to the Spanish flu. I've compared it to swine flu and the typical flu that comes every year that kills tens of thousands of people. Make no mistake, it's a deadly disease, the flu, and it kills more children than the COVID-19 does. Very small kids are much more vulnerable than the COVID-19, even though a few are having a Kawasaki-like disease. So the flu does kill tons of people. However, the mortality rate for the COVID, if you get it, and you're 70 years old or more, the mortality rate is seismically different than the mortality rate of the flu. It's many, many, many times more mortality and death from the coronavirus than the flu. Also, when you compare it to contagiousness, you compare it to the flu. The flu is not contagious. Almost, the coronavirus exhibits somewhat of an aerosolized and living longer, such as the measles. The measles are probably one of the most contagious and virulent virus we've studied in virology, and we think it stays in the air for hours and hours, maybe a day, not really a day, but for hours and hours, the measles. That's the most, of all the virus we look at, the measles are typically used as the standard of the most contagious thing we've ever seen. But the mortality with measles is not as high as the coronavirus. The coronavirus has exhibited measles-like endurance on surfaces. So when you compare it to the flu, the flu, many more Americans got the flu last year, probably in your state for sure, than they got this COVID. And the amount of deaths may have been greater in your state than the COVID. The problem is this thing's much more contagious and a much higher rate of mortality, especially if you have comorbidity. But when we talk about this, we could argue till the cows come home that we never walk out of our house for the rest of our lives. So we protect the people that are 80 years old. That's great. To protect the people that don't dedicate their lives to our society for 80 years, it's a noble thing to do. But then you see their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren, sitting in front of a computer for a half a year in school, and that's basically almost like no school. So, and they're not exercising. So we are saving the elderly at the expense of the next generation. We're honoring the past generation because those are the ones that are most vulnerable. And we, at some point, we have to figure out how to live. Now, this is the point where we got to figure out how to live with coronavirus. We cannot sacrifice our country, the economy that the 80-year-old worked for, and transferred to the 50-year-old kid who then has their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren. There's going to be nothing left to this nation if we stay sheltered in place. So it sounds to me like you're coming from, well, we're overreacting. We didn't overreact at first because the hospitals got overwhelmed. I'm in the epicenter, Long Island, Nassau County, New York, and then in New York City, too. And the hospitals got overwhelmed, and it was reasonable to shut everything down so we could at least have a hospital bed for a sick person. But then that got all distorted and warped, and to this day, we're not learning to live with the COVID-19, and we have to live with it. We're not going to get a vaccine overnight. There's going to be no cure, and we have to realize in the worst case scenario, 98 to 99% of the people will survive if we do nothing. But we don't want a horror scene, an inhumane scene. We have to maintain humanity and figure out how to live with this thing.
Okay, well, a cold is a coronavirus, and you said that you live in the epicenter. Now, in New York, the hospitals, if they report that a person died of COVID-19, when in fact they died in a car crash, the hospital gets, I believe, $39,000 or much more. And so there's been a lot of over-reporting of people who really died of other things, and so the numbers were much higher in your area, and also if you have people, if you have doctors who are no longer dealing with their regular patients, where other surgeries have been put off because of the COVID-19. There's a lot of people who have gone without medical care, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but who have gone without medical care simply because of the focus on just one very small segment of the population. And you talked about the 80-year-olds. Well, I don't know. I mean, people when they do have other things going on, high blood pressure or whatever else they have going on, most of those 70 and 80-year-old people aren't running around out in public. They're home in their rocking chair watching soap operas or whatever.
Now, let's deal with the people in the nursing home in New York City. When first, the statistics are all whacked out because if they die in the nursing home and they got cancer and then they got COVID, are they called COVID or are they called cancer? And the statistics, the death rate, you're absolutely right. There's political incentivization and complications to calculating the absolute death rate for real. On the other hand, when people... Before March 15th, when Governor Cuomo put all the COVID-positive patients from the hospital into the nursing homes, before that, if you died, nobody put COVID on your death certificate. After March 15th, I believe, was the date, until I think it was Mother's Day, everybody was dumped out of the hospitals to open the hospitals and put in nursing homes where the most highest rate of comorbidity with high blood pressure and diabetes exists. And for some reason, and this is not a Democrat or Republican thing, the CDC at the executive level was saying put the people from the hospital into the nursing home, even if the COVID positive, which they were, so we could have more hospital beds. And then it was contaminating and killing all the people in the nursing homes that might still be alive today if they weren't exposed to the coronavirus. But they were. And then about Mother's Day, the governor here decided to change his mind, and I believe the CDC changed its mind. What's bizarre is they set up, they took a naval hospital ship to New York. They set up the Jacob Javits Center as one of the largest hospitals in the country for this kind of thing, and nobody with COVID was put on these two humongous things, and they were put in nursing homes. The statistics: did you die from COVID? If it was April 3rd and you got the COVID, but you had very bad diabetes and high blood pressure, what do they put on your birth certificate? I don't even know what the right answer is, but I'm sure the lawyers and the politicians and the bureaucrats have an answer, but I'm not very happy with how our government has handled it from a state or a federal level.
I'm sorry to interrupt. We do have a quick 3-minute break. We will be right back. We'll pick this up on the other side.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead. To change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me.
Back, and our guest is Dr. Dean Hart. His website is deanhartscientist.com, and we're talking about masks, we're talking about nursing homes, we're talking about people who have perished. I feel really sorry for the people in nursing homes who are not allowed to have their family, or their family is not allowed to visit them. And I'm thinking that these people, maybe they don't understand what is going on. And I think it's pretty sad that their families are not allowed to visit. What are your thoughts? Are you still there or no? Did we lose our guest? Maybe he muted himself or something. Okay. Meanwhile, we could take some calls. If you have a question or a comment, feel free to call in. Sorry, we seem to have lost our guest. And there's certainly some interesting comments and questions and thoughts. It just is very, very sad what is going on. And of course, it is an economic assault on our country for a relatively few people who have perished or who have it or don't have it. Even if you have a cold, your antibodies are going to test positive. And they say, oh, if you have an increased temperature, then you may have it. Well, my gosh, that seems so minor that if your temperature is up a little bit, that you might have it. And the test, you have to question, okay, who created the test? What does it involve? Is it merely taking your temperature? And how did they create the test so quickly? Seriously, these are all questions that people need to ask. And as far as the flu, the only time that I ever got the flu is after I got a flu shot. And I haven't had a flu shot since then. So sometimes the people get sick from actually having a shot or a vaccine. Okay, our guest is back. Dr. Hart, welcome back. We lost you.
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay. All righty. Well, I'm glad you're back. So we were talking about, and I mentioned in your absence that I felt bad for the people in nursing homes who now are not allowed to see their family, or their family is not allowed to come in and visit them. Oh, that's so sad to me. How do you explain to an elderly person that maybe has some mental issues that all of a sudden you can't see your family? It just seems very sad to me. And I'd like
Well,
to talk more about the measles too. And we do have a caller. So,
I agree. It's very sad that they can't. They can even die in a hospital without saying goodbye to their loved ones.
right. Oh my
Sad a thing.
gosh. That's despicable. It really is.
It is. It is.
Who made these rules up?
Well, the public health people, there's some logic to it. The nursing home is a mess. The hospital is some logic to it because the last thing you really want to do is perpetuate a very contagious disease in the hospital. The nursing home, don't get me going, because I don't think COVID positive patients were supposed to be put in nursing homes. I don't care if you're at the executive level of the government, Democrat or Republican, you just don't put COVID positive patients with the elderly that are most likely to suffer. So the nursing home's a catastrophe that we'll be talking about for many years. The hospital, it's a public health issue. You come in, you're very contagious, and you're about to die. I don't know. It's sad. It's just sad. There's no good answer.
Well, the hospitals are probably one of the most disease-ridden places. You go into a hospital, you could pick up C. diff, you could pick up all kinds of germs. They've got more germs in the hospital than just about anywhere that you can think of. And a lot of the diseases, a lot of the problems, health issues that people have are results of their visit to a hospital. So, go ahead,
The name of that is
respond.
a nosocomial infection, and no matter how hard hospitals try, a lot of people die from secondary infections if they go through surgery, if they're just in the hospital. This is a huge problem since the beginning of time when they made a first hospital. It's always been a problem of transmission of more
Right.
bacteria, but virus in this case.
Right. All righty, let's take a caller. Mark in Philadelphia. Mark, welcome.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello?
Can you hear me, Deanna?
Yes,
Yes.
we can hear you.
Okay. It's been a long time since I've called into your show. I'm 59 years old. I'm a veteran of the United States Navy. And what I'm about to share with you, I've been researching this for some time. My take on this is, number one, I don't trust the medical industrial complex. They are not looking out for our best interest. The FDA and Big Pharma, the largest healthcare provider in the United States, would be the Veterans Administration system. Okay? Who runs it? Big Pharma. Now, that isn't how it appears, because there's government workers, but there's key government workers that make the decisions on how the VA is going forward. So, my take on this also is that this is a biological war. My understanding is that in the Research Triangle Park of North Carolina is where this virus was developed. And then when Fauci found out about it, wow, he latched onto it. But then, for some reason, they couldn't continue on with it. So what did he do? He moved it over to Wuhan. Now, we're being told that Wuhan, the Chinese, the biological war is coming from the Chinese. Well, let me tell you something. It's not coming from the Chinese. It's coming from the CDC and the corporate manipulators behind our government. Okay? But there's an even deeper aspect to this. It's called psychological warfare. Because what they're trying to do, Deanna, is to drive the American people into apathy. Apathy, where they give up and they don't care about nothing. That's what we should fear. Apathy. And we got to start standing up and learning how to say no. If you can't say no and mean it, your yeses don't mean a damn thing. And a lot of people have learned how to become yes men because they need the money. Okay, so a lot of people are working wherever they're working, and they continue to say yes to this and yes to that. They go along. They'll compromise their own deeper sense of things because they need the money. Well, it's about time we stop that crap and we start standing up and saying no. So people out there listening, if you need to learn how to practice saying no again, start small. Start small. Say no. If something doesn't sound right, just go up and just say no, I'm not doing it. Okay? Get into practice of saying no, and hopefully eventually enough of us will stand up and say no. Because now they're hearing, because either the corporatists behind all this are pushing for this vaccine, and I'm getting a hint that Trump has even hinted that the military will be involved. Now, when I first heard about Obamacare, I said, wait a minute. The first thing that came to my mind was, wow, they're going to go door to door and force people to take stuff, even though they're very healthy. And then they'll say, well, you've got to take it because you don't care about your neighbor. Now, they weren't able to push it through Obamacare, but they're pushing it now. And my understanding is they're going to push vaccines at the force of the military. That's what's coming. That's my sense of what's coming. Okay? So now they get us all waiting. We want to trust and believe in the best. We want to look for the good in Trump and hope that he's trying to do the right thing. However, I've got a lot of questions about that, especially because he brings up that the military is going to administer the vaccines. So people wake up. So that's what I have to share with you, Deanna.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your phone call. Dr. Hart, what is your response to that?
Well, there are conspiracy theories for sure. I've heard all sorts of ones, and we will never know. We don't have the transparency of government. We don't trust anybody at the level of the government, and I understand perfectly well I don't care if the politicians in a robes or if they're executive, a legislature, if it's part of the bureaucracy we're living with, we citizens should say no to trusting them in general, and they should be more accountable. But this is the conundrum that drives our society. As far as vaccines go, you know, I don't personally, I'm not interested in taking vaccines. If I have any choice, I avoid it. But when it comes to something such as the measles that we brought up earlier in the show, with the measles, it's so contagious, and it does have enough effect on all sorts of people. The measles vaccine, for groups to not take it when the children are there and have the parents have the autonomy for the children that no, they should never take the measles vaccine, to me, that's just a little too far anti-vaccine. Now, when the coronavirus vaccine comes up and they've rushed it through, and like you said, there'll be great profits in whoever makes that vaccine. I'm looking with an eye of skepticism on that COVID-19 vaccine, and I'm not first online. I'm like a billionth online for that vaccine. So different vaccines, different feelings, but I'm a scientist and look at the data. Unfortunately, with this COVID-19, we don't have the data. It's being kept from us by Democrat and Republican bureaucrats and politicians, and the libertarian point of view, they're only the third biggest party, so that's not strong enough
to get too far, because it's number three, and Democrats and Republicans are one and two, and they have all the power. But when it comes with this COVID vaccine, I'm not first on line. I hope the military doesn't knock on my door to make me take the shot in the beginning. They talk about the poor have to get access to it. I feel sorry if the poor think that this is a panacea. If it comes out before the end of the year, you just can't test the you could test efficacy, but safety, I'm not comfortable with the safety of any vaccine that's fast-tracked.
Well, of course, and when you go back and look at the Affordable Health Care Act, this vaccine situation did not occur overnight. This has been in the making incrementally for a long time. Hillary Clinton, when she was what should we call her? Her husband's right hand woman or right hand whatever. She was trying to get an Affordable Health Care Act through then, and then Obama came in and he pushed it through. And what it really is saying is that the government owns your body, and if you have a certain disease, if you have a certain illness, then we have the right to enforce you to force you to accept the treatment that we designed to make you better. In other words, they now, because of the Affordable Health Care Act, apparently seem to think that they own our bodies. And we've had children taken away from families because they refused to accept chemotherapy and opted for something different, something better, something safer, something more effective. And so I think you have to go back a long way. And as far as measles, it used to be that children, when you're talking about measles, when you're talking about chickenpox, you get together and you have a measles party, you have a chickenpox party. Everybody gets a disease. You get lifetime immunity, and the measles is not it isn't a killer. It is just one of those things that strengthens your immunity. It's lifetime immunity, and now because of the chickenpox vaccine, you have an epidemic of shingles. It's very, very sad. We do have some more callers, so why don't we? Now that I've had my little rant, let's take the next caller in line. Ed in Utah.
Yes, Dr. Hart, is it?
Yes.
Yes, Dr. Hart, I really don't agree with you. It almost seems you're apologetic with all of the draconian measures that are being taken here. I'm going to go along with that previous caller, that this is more about psychological warfare, just like I said in a previous call on the matter about Pavlovian responses, 6-foot rules. I think social distancing is evil. And so, but it also serves to get us thinking that this disease is deadlier than it is, and it's all about the disease, when no, it's a bait and switch. It's a bait and switch about the resetting of the world economy and the power structures within that world economy. And so while we're all bogged down with keeping 6 foot apart at the grocery store and causing consternation between community people in West Valley, Utah, right here, saying, get out of my 6 foot zone. This type of divide and conquer is the real purpose of it. This is not unintended consequences. This is the intended consequence of societal takeover happening right here in River City. That's what I'm saying. And for you to come along and to say, well, we got to do something. Well, why is the something always what Bill Gates connected, Dr. Fauci, and Burks, who should be under criminal investigation just with what we know? You say there's no government transparency. We don't need the government to do that at this point. We have John Rappaport. We have Dr. Lorraine Day. We have Dr. Judy Mikovits with documented, detailed information, and Donald Trump himself, who defunded HWO, but there's still 11% of their funding coming out of the wallet of Bill Gates and his connections to Dr. Burks' daughter. What do you say to all that, sir?
Well, the WHO does some things that I know are very very altruistic and help people that are suffering and poor. However, when it comes to this COVID thing, I have never seen such a horror of a bureaucracy that's supposed to protect the globe and work with the communist Chinese government to keep the knowledge of this COVID away from everyone globally. For a month and a half, they were saying, you can't get it from another human to human. You can't get it from doctor to patient. And then once the cat came out of the bag and everybody knew it was a pandemic, everybody's getting sick all over the world, they said, oh, okay, there's a pandemic. The WHO politically is an embarrassment, and yes, they do beautiful, holistic, beautiful, great things on the one hand. On the other hand, in this case, we're talking about COVID, they were a walking nightmare for our world, for our globe.
Okay.
Yeah, are you still there, Dr. Hart?
Yeah, he's still here.
Yeah, well, one last comment, and I'll let you go on to other callers. But I agree with your last statement there, but the cat out of the bag, that cat, I'm going to tell you right now, I agree with John Rappaport. That cat is the plandemic, or if you will, the idea of what they're labeling in the Lombardy province in Italy, what they're labeling in Chicago, and what they're labeling in Wuhan itself are not the same things. They're similar flu-like conditions being falsely labeled COVID to give the illusion of a worldwide pandemic. Hence, they're going for broke in getting the New World Order and getting people to stay socially distant and to stop not only Trump rallies, but also the anti-vaxxer movement, which has gained heavy steam, led by Dr. Judy Mikovits and Hecklings Lively. This is what's going on. This is a political takedown. And I have to say that maybe you should be stronger on looking on that aspect. But that's what I had to say, Deanna.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ed.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Let's quickly take John in California. John?
Yeah, good afternoon, Deanna, and good afternoon, Dr. Hart. And,
good afternoon.
Dr. Hart, I have to agree with that, the last caller and probably the previous caller and so forth. But anyway, I think with the very first few sentences that you had on this show today with Deanna, and you were talking about, wearing masks and the advantages and disadvantages and the overall value in wearing a mask at all, especially when you're walking around outside, you know, in the sun with ultraviolet rays from the sun and cosmic rays and oxygen in the air and so forth. And I think the false impression being given by the politicians who infect or infest various county and state governments are probably more to blame for a lot of what's going on here negatively, just as much as the governor Gavin Newsom is, because they're going along with everything, and I'm not even I'm making a mistake by leaving out the local police too. They're the ones who are enforcing it with $1,000 fines and up to 90 days in jail if you don't wear a mask. Now that's in San Bernardino County, which I'm in. They've already we've gone through the mask thing, and about 2 weeks ago on a Friday, they changed their tune and said you don't have to wear a mask anymore, but we still recommend it. Okay, whatever that means. And I think Riverside County also did the same thing. But my question to you, sir, is really, of what value is the mask? And I think you were right in the middle of you made a point, and I think Deanna was just being generous by not challenging you on it, but you said there would be advantages if someone had been infected by the COVID-19, but they were asymptomatic, meaning they're not, you know, sneezing and blowing nasal refuse all over the place and coughing and all that kind of stuff. Okay, but if everyone else has got a mask on, what difference does it make? The mask is going to protect all the other people, right?
What happens with masks is if you're battling the virus with or without symptoms, you have a bunch of virus in your lungs and your respiratory tract. And the best of masks are only 95% of a sealant against air. And I guarantee you, you're never going to buy a 95% sealant mask. You're going to get something.
That's another point, yes. Correct.
The mask we're going to get as citizens a stink. But the thing is that those that are positive that their bodies are fighting the COVID virus, there's a lot of science to show, I don't care if it's the flu or the measles, the mumps, or COVID, there's a lot of evidence to show the mask does catch a lot of the viral load expelled when you speak, when you sneeze, when you cough. The mask catches that stuff. Now, the gray area is, how the heck do you know if you're asymptomatic that you can help out the family, the neighbors, by wearing a mask?
Correct. Correct.
With
that's a good
the
point.
Government
yes, that's the
has
whole
let
point.
Us down big time in testing so that we could, you know, and there's a way you can take a pregnancy test in your bathroom. Not me, my wife could. And, no, if you're pregnant, there's similar ways to do that for COVID so you can know in the privacy of your own home quickly if you are positive and you should worry. And then if you know you're a carrier but asymptomatic, it would be nice to wear a mask. The science is there. But we don't know with the asymptomatic ones. We know with the symptomatic ones, and they're not going out too much anyway, except maybe to the doctor or the hospital. But you can be mildly and moderately infected, and the wearing of a mask when you're positive, if you have the virus in your upper respiratory tract, seems like, I hate to use the word a no-brainer, but it will catch many, many viral particles and expose people to much less lower viral load if you're infected.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's good. All righty. John, thank you for your phone call. We do have another
okay,
phone call.
All right, I'll let it go with that then. I'll let it go. Okay,
okay,
bye.
Thank you. Okay, we have another John in California. No, it's the same. Oh, it's the same one? Oh, okay. So, all righty. So we're talking about the mask. I personally think that if you can't breathe, I think that if you have COVID and you can't breathe, you shouldn't be having a mask on. You should stay home, take care of yourself. As far as the test, for if you have COVID or not, nobody checks the antibodies before a person becomes symptomatic. So how do you know that you didn't have antibodies before? And how do you know that you have COVID-19 if somebody says, oh, you have antibodies? Well, how do you know you didn't have them before? Because nobody ever checks that. And it's the antibodies that tell you what you have or don't have.
The antibody looks backwards. You get antibodies after you get infected. Your body reacts with antibodies. There's a different test. It's not the antibody test. It's a polymerase test to see if you're currently infected, yes or no.
Okay. But you don't have a test before, so how would you know you could have tested positive before? Okay, we'll be right back after our sponsors. Back, this is Deanna, and our guest this last hour has been Dr. Dean Hart. His website is deanhartscientist.com. Let me share just a little brief story with you. And while I'm sharing the story, could you let us know after I share the story what you think of Dr. Judy Mikovits? Anyway, I was walking to the mailbox. My mailbox is about halfway down the block, and there was a little child with her mother, and the little child's probably 3 or 4, preschool, a darling little girl, and she bat clear away, and her mother said, oh, so-and-so is just so vigilant about 6 feet having being 6 feet away, and she's so vigilant. She's better than I am, and I'm thinking, my gosh, a little 3 or 4 year old child has to be worried, has to be afraid of people in her neighborhood who think that she's precious and delightful. No 3 to 4 year old child should be worried, should be in fear of other people. What an awful thing to put on a child. Okay, mm-hmm. Getting back to my question. What do you think about Dr. Judy Mikovits? I've read both of her books. What do you think about her?
I haven't quite gotten through her books. Which subject? I'm not that familiar
with. What do you think
of
her as a scientist?
I don't know her personally, actually.
You know of her and what she has said? It's been pretty well publicized on the internet without reading the books.
What's her position?
Her position is that vaccines are probably the instrument that has caused most, if not all, of the viruses and all of the illnesses that we now experience in society.
Well, the argument, now I understand, there are arguments, antibiotics. They create antibiotic-resistant bacteria, so you're like a dog chasing your tail around and around. However, as a scientist, that I'm not beholden or funded by any group, be it any side, and I have no love of either side of the political arena, I've got to say that the vaccine, getting back to measles, which is the most popular one to debate, the horror of having pregnant women exposed to measles in the old days, it was unbelievable, the birth defects that were coming from that. And now we have very little measles. But we also have that problem with the antibiotics creating resistance for bacteria, and you got to create new antibiotics. Maybe we're running out of antibiotics, and some anti-superbug will just eat all of humanity up. And I could see that happening. The problem is, if we live in fear of conspiracy, or if we fear the basic science, then where do we go?
I think the truth is where we find it, and what we believe, and what we feel, what we've experienced. Thank you so much, Dr. Hart, for being on the program.
Oh, you're very welcome. Nice talking with you.
All righty. Have a good rest of the weekend.
You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye, listeners. We will visit next week. Thank you for listening.